you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to ask for unanimous consent to adopt the following motion. That notwithstanding any standing order, special order, or usual practice of the House, the recognition made by the Speaker of the House of an individual present in the galleries during the joint address to Parliament by His Excellency Volodymyr Zelensky be struck from the appendix of the House of Commons debates of Thursday, September 21st, 2023, and from any House multimedia recording.
Yeah, Leader of the House there, the Canadian government looking to strike the whole Nazi thing from the record. Didn't go down that well. Yeah. Oh, welcome back to English History, Fact and Fiction, episode the 325th. George III, Part 2. My name's Dick Newman. Let's get on with it. Yeah, George III set a trend by recycling Handel's Zadok the Priest that he's silly beheading, but he also commissioned a heap of new works from William Boyce, our deaf composer. That was one that was played at the silly beheading, The King Shall Rejoice. So last week we got George silly behatted and on the big chair and started in his kind of career, I suppose. George wants to rule. Yes, he's messy. Not only that, he wants to rule a non-corrupt type bipartisan thing. Well, that's not going to go well. It hasn't been going well, and it's going to continue to not go well. So, to increase political tension, George won't be shy when letting people know what he wants. Duke of Richmond will be in whinging about some guys who got jobs, and George will politely tell him to mind his own business. The Duke will continue on, so he will get to see angry George. Making a king angry is a bad move. Then he can give offence to a heap of people by inviting that George Sackville back to court. Oh, that is, George III will give offence to a heap of people by inviting George Sackville back to court. Sackville, if you forgot, was the guy who failed to give chase to the running away Frenchies at Minden. The court-martial had said he should never hold a military post ever again. That's about as damning as you can get, so it was not a good idea to have the guy back. William Pitt will be offended. I might now just pop in a handy reminder that the Seven Years' War is still on the go. George has walked into the middle of it, that's all. It will be going from 1756 to 1763, and in fact, 7 years after it finishes will be when we get Marie Antoinette marrying the Dolphin as part of the deal to keep the peace between the Sausage Empire and the Frenchies. But back to now, and it is still going on. It then included the French and Indian War in North America, the Carnatic Wars in India, and the Anglo-Spanish War, and whoops, that last one's about to break out. Sorry. So the Anglo-Spanish War not quite breaking out just yet. It was about Team Britain versus Team Frenchies, and rather than focus on the Anglo-Spanish War about to break out, let's focus on peace, because that's what we want. All we are saying is give peace a chance. It might have been easier if George hadn't just taken over the big chair and started buggering around with the ministry. You've got to have your priorities, George. Pitt wants to do the peace thing, and by that I mean he wants to be the guy to do it personally. George has got no experience in war and, let's see, none in peace deals either. But he sees himself as, well, the king who should be leading these things. George wants peace, but on reasonable terms. Well, that's what everybody wants. Yeah, great, but Pitt just wants to argue with everyone and Newcastle and his mob can't come up with much at all. It's all wishy-washy shit that they're coming up with. But then if you look at Pitt, you've got to ask yourself, how could this bloke ever talk an enemy into a peace deal? He is too impatient and belligerent. Pitt will be blamed for a fail with the Frenchies, but it seems to have been the case that the Frenchies failed to give Spain what it wanted in the deal, so the war continues, and now it looks like Spain will join France. Pitt will be saying, look, we need to declare war on Spain immediately to get the jump on this thing. The ministry will disagree, so Pitt will take it to George. That will be a no from George too. Pitt will resign and say he will not oppose whatever George supports or attend the House of Commons unless he has to defend his own policies or support cash for the army. Pitt will be offered Governor General of Canada, which would have brought some cash in for him, but really, Canada? Who the fuck wants to go there apart from Nazis fleeing Europe? Not for Pitt, the power player, thanks. He will, though, take an annuity of £3,000 a year. Yeah, thanks very much. A bit of free cash from the government. The press is divided, as it is in our own times. Pitt supporting papers say it's a shame that Pitt has gone and we're all doomed. Bute supporting papers will say George should be protected from similar ministers to Pitt in the future. Ministers who hand out audacious treatment to the King. But the Council of the City of London will pass a unanimous vote of thanks to Pitt for arousing the ancient spirit of the nation. Then George and Charlotte will attend the Lord Mayor's banquet where Pitt gets more applause than the royals. Oh dear. Pitt will be defending his conduct, which will include criticism of the new ministry, but he doesn't get a lot of support. George will be pleased and Pitt is accused of having a want of confidence in the King. That means we're saying the King isn't confident in Pitt. Well, we fucking know that. Meanwhile, we're still trying to sort out our foreign policy. George and Bute seem to just want to ditch Hanover. In comes a letter from Fred the Great to let the younger, inexperienced George know what he should and should not be doing. The young and inexperienced George will be pissed off with that. He doesn't want some other king telling him what to do. George will now fall out with Bute over peace plans, and George is wanting expenditure cut and Bute's handling of the government. So he'll be rather surprised when Newcastle resigns as First Lord of the Treasury to be replaced by old Bute. Newcastle has been around continually, almost continually, for 38 years. He's had to put up with a lot in that time, but the combination of George III and Bute were just too much for him. Sure, we get the change happens, but too much too soon can be destabilising. And we just had a big old bit of destabilisation. Newcastle had felt ignored and that George had no confidence in him. And, well, yeah, it certainly looked that way. George thought that Newcastle was slowly driving the place to bankruptcy, so did not ask him to reconsider his resignation. George will be keen that Bute jump into the driver's seat, despite Bute pointing out he didn't know what he was doing and that he wasn't up to the job. Newcastle will then get Pitt to support him against Bute's preliminary peace plans. George will just have to get off his arse and go to Newcastle to argue the case. George's case is we can't afford to keep up a stupid foreign war. Newcastle's case is that we can't afford peace if it means abandoning our European allies. That is Fred the Great mainly, but there's plenty of others. The guys cannot agree on which territory should be returned either, so it'll be calling William Cavendish, Duke of Devonshire, to attend Cabinet to help decide. Oh shit, no, says William, I'm not coming into a bun fight like that. George will take that personally, and William is sacked as Lord Chamberlain and as a member of the Privy Council. George will even refuse to see William to take back his badges of office. William's allies will now all resign. Great, say the government, now we can stack the place with some nice yes men. But it isn't over yet. We need to see the newspapers, which will point out that the Cavendishes have been long-time supporters of the House of Hanover, and George's treatment of William is unprecedented. I've got to agree with that too. What's George got? Newcastle supporters will be removed from their jobs. This includes minor officials. It's not just government, it's local government as well. Hostility is ramping up and it's all looking a bit vindictive. In comes the Frenchie ambassador for a chat with George. Look, George, we Frenchies are just a bit bloody confused on one matter. Is it war or peace you poms want? Well, says George, oh shit, fuck, shit, bugger. I mean, look, it's like this. We've got this fucking constitution and, well, I'm fucked if I know. Some of us want peace and that includes me, but others think we're about to take Havana off Spain and, oh shit, do you know we've got two secretaries of state? My great-granddad thought that one up. What a little gin. one of these guys wants peace and the other wants war, and there's plenty more who want to change the terms of our proposal. The French ambassador will report back that there are divisions in the government. It will be a reshuffle of the ministry. No big changes, which will bring criticism. Like, the ministry's not working, we want big change. Newcastle and Pitt are still out. These are two guys who could run the thing. Oh, well. Henry Fox is in to manage the Commons, but he has a reputation for serious corruption. Big stuff. And that is not what George's Prince of Wales was on about. That prince was all about probity. Still on balance, it seems there are more guys looking for peace than war at the minute, which is helpful. Newspapers are pushing Peacenik and terribly British George as opposed to our ally German Fred, the Great, who wants more war. Allow me to quote the Royal Magazine. Is it possible to imagine that the people of Great Britain can be deluded to such a degree as to murmur against their sovereign for having a British heart and preferring the prosperity of his native country to the interests and passions of a foreign prince? Everybody stopped, says the opposition. He can't seriously be thinking about handing Martinique and Guadeloupe back to the filthy Frenchies. All that lovely sugar cane being held by our wealthy guys is great. The London Evening Post has a handy reporter who goes by the name of Britannicus. Yeah, being anonymous, always helpful, isn't it? He will write that George's honour demands he tell his guys in Parliament about what peace terms the people want. Yeah. We people seem to always want wars that protect rich guys' income just as long as the government says it's about freedom and democracy. 2 days later, and the paper is on about we need some proper method to convey the sense of the nation to the royal ear. Yeah, well, we've got that, you dickheads. It's called fucking Parliament. Well, that's all going on. 12th of August, 1762, a boy, George IV. Well, it's not called IV just yet. First go for Charlotte and an heir to the big chair, so well done that queen.
I got my mind set on you. I got my mind set on you. I got my mind set on you. Got my mind set on you. But it's gonna take money. A whole lot of spending money. It's gonna take plenty of money to do it right, child.
And that would have been on my playlist the year my firstborn turned up on the planet, except we didn't have playlists back then. No, we had mixtapes. And if you don't know what a mixtape is, I'm not telling you. 4 months later, in Parliament. The King wants peace. George will get it. How we see this is that Britain and Prussia have defeated France and Spain. Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. Lots of stuff was handed back by the Frenchies and the British, but in the north of America, England gets pretty much all the Frenchy stuff. Because we're also following India, I'll let you know that the Frenchies can have their Indian stuff back. But coming back to America, the action has been in the north. It's a different story in the southern parts of what is now the USA. For example, this treaty, the Treaty of Paris in 1763, will see Louisiana handed over by the Frenchies to the Spanish. Oh shit, did I just say that out loud? It was a total secret between the Frenchies and the Spanish. Oh well. You may also be wondering about the West Indian stuff. That's where the money is. Well, you had places like Guadeloupe, which was knocking out about £6 million a year in sugar. Bute decided it could go back to the Frenchies in exchange for the Frenchie stuff in the expensive to hang on to Canada. On the surface, a stupid idea. Bute got it, though, that if you just take stuff from a country, then there's a good chance you'll end right back into a war with them over that stuff you took. You might be wondering also about now the Frenchy Catholics who are wandering around in Canada. These settlers are suddenly English subjects. Well, we're all enlightened now, so it's all cool. Hey, you guys, keep on doing the Catholic magic show and suck up to Big Papa Pope if it makes you happy. We don't care anymore. So, Bute, and we strongly associate Bute with George. And Bute wanted to keep the Frenchies happy. He thought that if he kept them happy, then they wouldn't want war anymore. Yeah. The Frenchies, though, thought that they'd be straight back to war with Britain as soon as they could save up their pocket money. Sir Charles Asgill, on behalf of 900 London merchants, will thank George. The Lord Mayor was a Pitt supporter, so he refused to give the thank you George speech. Now, we might think that Bute has done well as Prime Minister, but he's not holding up well to the stress of the job. It's worse for him because he's a Scotty, and we English are still Scottiest, or whatever the right word is, for our prejudice against the Scotties. Just to make it worse, the government has put up an excise on cider, which is copying it big time in the Lords. It was Bute's job to go and try and defend the idea, and that's made him unwell. The mob are also giving George a very hard time over the cider excise. He is being portrayed as a miser, taking small change from poor common smellies to hoard in his piggy bank. George and Bute also want to work on reform of the court to reduce corruption. In comes William Talbot to be Lord Steward and find out that reforming entrenched corruption is not as easy as it looks. So, in the interim, it'll be cost-cutting. Damn me. The popularity of the royal household is down. BYO Ice Vovos to morning tea is no fun. George will get involved in studying the income and outgo of the royal laundress. Now that is what you call micromanagement, and it's not a good thing for a king to be doing. Still, we have to give George some points. He wants to reduce expenditure so he can reduce taxation. That's a nice goal, and it's also why he was looking for peace. He also, though, wants to increase revenue from the colonies to pay for the standing army. Now, we want peace, and we want a standing army, and that's a bit of a mismatch. May not be the best idea. But back to praise for George, who will always look to promote professional guys who have experience and probity. This looks great, but is of course not the usual political practice where we give jobs to ensure one party's interests are served, and that gives us political reliability. George then will develop some loyal guys. Guys who share his ideas of a non-corrupt government and parliament. Guys who are willing to back the king no matter the political consequences. And they will of course be attacked. Threats to the constitution, or they're an evil cabal run by Bute. And oh no, George is promoting these guys into jobs where they can do some serious harm. First Lord of the Admiralty, Treasurer of the Navy, Secretary of War. George is being described as the victim of tensions, copping pressure over patronage and whatever. Samuel Johnson can see the weakness in the rain, writing, "It would be unreasonable to expect much from the immaturity of juvenile years and the ignorance of princely education. He has long been in the hands of the Scots and has already favoured them more than the English will contentedly endure. But perhaps he scarcely knows whom he has distinguished or whom he has disgusted." Yeah, look, it does seem that Johnson's got a bit of a point there. George is not consulting enough or looking to satisfy the political interests in Parliament. George is showing us that he has virtues. Oh, God, virtues. It's hard for a ruler to survive that. Opposition papers will ramp up their attack on the peace terms made in the Treaty of Paris and charging that people were being made ready for the autocratic notions of non-resistance and passive obedience. George is still being hammered with the accusations of subversion of the Constitution and Toryism. They're saying he's trying to be an absolute monarch. That's what they're saying without actually saying those words. George has increased the number of lords in the big chamber, which for the opposition means more peers are dependent on George. George may be forced into accepting guys into his household that he does not like. The opposition think Bute is stuffed. He's got abstract ideas that are not practical and he can't grasp political management. George relying on Bute is seen as a weakness, and the unpopularity of Bute is rubbing off on George. Bute will resign on the 8th of April 1763. George will write to him, "Thank God I have a friend. That comforts me and makes me look on my ministers as my tools solely in my public capacity." Ooh, yes, me. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is great if we get a leader who wishes beneficial reform such as an end to corruption. Marvellous. Not that we get them, but well, as if we did. The difficulty being that corruption is totally entrenched in our governments, all of them. Trying to reform that entrenched corruption in one hit just will not work. There are way too many people in power working against you. It has to be tackled slowly. George thinks the whole thing can just happen under his watch. He came to the big chair on the basis that he would free Britain of its debts and make the place the residence of the true piety and virtue. Yeah, piety and virtue and making money do not go well together. By 1763, George has had a harsh dose of reality. Now his goal is to not be a toy of the factions. He wants to establish royal authority without actually breaking the law. He will chat this stuff out with the Frenchy ambassador. Now look, there you go. A king chatting out his goals with a bloody foreigner indicates that he's at odds with his own countrymen. That ambassador works for Louis XV, who's an absolute monarch, so what the fuck would he know anyway? George is trying to have a united ministry where the different factions all work together in peace, love and harmony. That can lead to national unity. Yeah, good luck. George has worked out that he needs to accept ministers who he may not like. On that basis, he thinks he may use the ministry to manage Parliament and get support for royal interests. James Park's been dead for about 5 years in podcast time, and I feel like I didn't give him anywhere near enough airplay. Although, I feel that same way with Vivaldi, I gave him a fair whack, didn't I? Right now, a little kiddie, Mozart, is visiting Paris to be shown off as a child prodigy. George needs to start realising that he won't be getting a unified parliament. At this time, our parties themselves aren't even united. They don't have any sort of clear leadership. There's no national party organisation or membership of parties. You can't join the Tory party because it doesn't actually exist. It's just a bunch of parliamentarians who loosely hang around with each other. George needs a new Prime Minister, and the guy who will be selected is George Granville. Oh dear. On paper, this guy is an excellent pick, just what George wants. A guy who is experienced and capable. He has had lots of jobs, Lord of the Admiralty, Secretary of State, Chancellor of the Exchequer and so on. Trouble is, he had helped cause a lot of stress for Bute over the peace terms and so helped Bute out the door. It was Granville, though, who eventually got the peace terms through Parliament, and that Parliament didn't really like the deal. But Granville got it through. It won't be long before the relationship between the two Georges will be bad and mistrustful. George III is regretting that his mate Bute is gone and Granville is aggro and will nag George and threaten to hold his breath till his face turns blue if he doesn't get his own way. Now that's not the way to handle George III. George III will make it worse by withdrawing a Granville seating. The two men will now conduct their meetings while standing. That's not good for a working relationship. George will soon be sniffing around for alternatives. But here we go, 16th of August 1763, a boy, Fred Duke of York, and spare heir. That is two from two for Charlotte. What a queen. George has found some guys willing to play politics with him, but they are insisting that Pitt has to be in there with them. Pitt, though, is still shitty that we made peace with France, and he won't play with guys who were involved in the peace treaty at all. Now, you might be thinking that George is being a dick by destabilising his current ministry here, but Granville had laid down the challenge. Either support this new ministry or form a new one yourself. Now, that was a challenge to royal authority, and George is not letting it go. So he will have a chat to Pitt. Pitt will tell George that the piece was dangerous, dishonourable and criminal. Pitt says he won't break the peace, but he intends to improve it. The way to do that is to give the boot to all those who are involved with the peace deal and replace them with those who oppose the peace deal. The overriding problem is that George is running a Tory government, according to Pitt, and it's not founded on the principles set down when we gave James II the boot, but it's adopting the opinions of prerogative and power of the Crown. And this is a bad, bad thing, George, and it's necessary to alter it. Pitt then wants to put back the team that had been there from 1757 to 1761. Yes, it ended in 1761 because George couldn't put up with it. Pitt will be telling everyone he had to do that because he, Pitt, was the ideal Whig and George was a reactionary, so I am right and George is wrong. But nobody much is buying that. In wanting everything, Pitt, you will get nothing. No, worse, here's a quote from the Earl of Oxford. The terms insisted upon were not only incompatible with the dignity and inconsistent with the honour of His Majesty, but of such a nature and extent that must have rendered him dependent upon power and left his subjects to the mercy of one set of men, the most dangerous event which could possibly befall this country. So George has got to go back to Grenville. The stuff with Pitt was no secret, so George will have to ask Grenville nicely to continue and promise to have nothing to do with Bute. Grenville will write a letter to his supporters saying that George has promised to not even see Bute until Grenville is satisfied that Bute's influence is finished. He'll read that letter out to George, which is pretty bloody humiliating. Grenville is now the sole top dog, and Bute is totally out. Grenville was at least a competent minister. I have to say that for the guy. George will still play a big role in foreign affairs. All instructions to envoys and ambassadors, diplomats, whatever, are sent to George for his approval. He will also continue his favour to the Tories, and they will continue to be loyal to him. That's individual Tories I'm talking about. The ministry may not be to his total liking, but the opposition's even worse. It's time for George to stand up and support his ministry in its clash with John Wilkes. Oh, he will too. Now, John Wilkes has been a naughty boy. He's got a newspaper called the North Briton, and that has been critical of the government. Oh, that's naughty. John Wilkes, though, was also a Member of Parliament. He sees himself as a radical reformer, and it was his criticism of Bute that really helped Bute decide to resign. George will make a speech on the 23rd of April 1763 and Wilkes will publish an article bagging that speech. He will then be arrested for seditious libel, and that was a bad move. Yeah, it's not like the 21st century where journalists are just killed or jailed and it all seems a bit ho-hum at our time. There are just too many journalists being killed or jailed for us to care much anymore. But back in 1763, arresting a journalist was seen as a very, very bad thing for a government to do. What did this guy write? Let's see. Every friend of his country must lament that a prince of so great and amiable qualities, whom England truly reveres, can be brought to give sanction of his sacred name to the most odious measures and to the most unjustifiable public declarations from a throne ever renowned for truth, honour and unsullied virtue. So it kind of translates to the king has evil advisers, yeah, the ministry. No, hang on, you're saying Wilkes is an MP, so he must have parliamentary privilege. Well spotted, my dear listener. So Wilkes did get tossed in a slammer, but he didn't have to wait too long before he got in front of a judge who, just like you, spotted that parliamentary privilege and said, on your way, lad. But the government are not finished with him that easily, so it will be see if we can work out how to toss him out of Parliament. Tricky because, well, democracy. Wilkes had this thing called an essay on woman. It's an obscene parody on Alexander Pope's essay on man. His house will be raided by the king's messengers and the thing will be taken. Oh dear, this is hot stuff, and Wilkes would have been absolutely mad to print it. But he can see the king's messengers are going to do just that, and then he'll be in deep shit. So he will pop a notice in the Public Advertiser. speedily will be published by Philip Carteret, Webb and Lovell Stanhope Esquires, an essay on woman. The guys he's named are those King's messengers, so he's put it all on them. But then he's going to make the big mistake of actually having a dozen or so copies printed for his friends. Now, I don't know why he did that. He might have thought it through. Good enough for the government to have another go at him for obscenity and blasphemy. There's no complete copies of the essay left, so all I can tell you is that something about Butte's anatomy is considered obscene, and something about the three is one and one is three thing is blasphemy. The essay will be read in the House of Lords with one poor sensitive soul fainting. The more pragmatic of the Lords, though, will wonder why we let Lord Sandwich, noted for his obscenities and blasphemies, be the one to attack the essay. One wit will observe that he hadn't previously seen the devil sermonise against sin. The other thing I can tell you, my dear listener, is that most of the Lords had plenty of laugh-out-loud moments. The thing was apparently very funny and obscene. Funny and obscene and blasphemous, and we've got you, Wilkes. Hopefully we also now have the public on side. Let me check the records, and look, here is a note from Horace Walpole. The plot so hopefully laid to blow up Wilkes was so gross and scandalous, so revengeful and so totally unconnected with the political conduct of Wilkes, and the instrument so despicable, odious, or in whom any pretensions to decency, sanctimony, or faith were so preposterous, that losing all sight of the scandal contained in the poem, the whole world almost united in crying out against the informers. Yeah, we're on Team Bloody Wilkes here. The hangman is out to burn the offending publications. That's what we do to offending publications. We have a public burning. But the mob will be in there with effigies of the Prime Minister to burn instead. While this has been going on, Wilkes had got bloody tangled up in a duel and wounded. Duels are still illegal, so we drop all the stupid charges over publications, and we can just go for him for illegal duelling, and that will get him running all the way to France. Now, there is a John Wilkes Club that is still in operation today, my dear listener. I have asked Google if there is a George Tree Club, but the closest I've got is club chairs from the time of George Tree. So, yeah, no George Tree Club, but a John Wilkes Club. Good on you, lad. George seems to think that he and his ministry have had a big victory here, and sure, they overcame the opposition, but the mob were clearly on Team Wilkes. George's opinion polls are down. It hasn't helped his working relationship with Grenville either, nor is he happy with the ministry. They don't seem to be interested in reducing the national debt, but just getting richer themselves. George is also worried about colonial policy. America are rather unhappy, and if anybody in England has any good ideas about doing good stuff in the colonies, then it's not terribly apparent. It will keep on going downhill between George and Grenville. Now, George has been sick a couple of times, and so wants a nice tidy Regency Bill to be passed. It seems pretty darn certain that he wants Queen Charlotte to be the regent in need, but doesn't want to name her because that would annoy his brother, Edward Duke of York. Grenville, though, missed both these choices, Charlotte and Edward. He thinks George wants Mummy Augusta to be the regent so she can be the puppet of Bute. So the act will be passed that just refers to the royal family, and we don't know if it's Augusta or who. Augusta is just the Dowager Princess of Wales, after all, really. George is back to Pitt. Again, He is determined that he wants a total change of the ministry, and advising him this time is Uncle Willie, Duke of Cumberland. People say, yeah, nah, mate. He suspected George would not suddenly have a load of confidence in him, so it would be the same old shit. Pitt also wanted a new alliance to counter the Frenchy-Spanish alliance. He wants a return to European interventionism. Another dub, so George will look at other guys, but they'll say no as well, and he's back to being bullied by Grenville. George will cop it from his ministers too. You fail to back your ministers, they say. People think you don't have confidence in us. George will say he had given them the confidence necessary for the conduct of the public business, but their conduct did not deserve his favour. And so it goes again until he's over it again and back to Pitt again. Uncle Willie will say, look, George, this time you need to go and see Pitt personally. George will give Pitt whatever job he wants for himself and for others. He'll agree to Pitt's policies on pretty much everything except diplomacy. Pitt wants that alliance with Man for War Fred the Great. George doesn't. While both these guys have shown us that they're totally stubborn, it looks like they can make a deal with each other. Pitt will say if Fred the Great refuses a treaty without a subsidy, then we should approach Austria on the same deal. It's going okay, but Pitt wants this guy Temple to get the treasury, and Temple will say no. Pitt will say, without him, I can't form a ministry, so you, George, should go back to Grenville. Again. Oh, fuck, that's his, George. Uncle Willie will go to the old Newcastle faction and say, look, can you guys form a ministry? Sure can. 10th of July, 1765, and George can see Grenville off. Guards check his pockets for teaspoons. I don't think he nicked any. I just want to humiliate the great big turd. A big part of the job had been to pay down the national debt after the 7 years' war. Tricky. The locals in North America, that is the Native Americans, were, oddly enough, not that happy with British rule. A bunch of them got together, with the main leader being a guy called Pontiac. He was from the Ottawa people. Those locals will do some destroying of forts and killing of settlers, and it will all be rather brutal. Nobody's really thought about war crimes yet or attempting to protect civilians, and once again, I wonder why I'm saying, look, it's not that much different in our own times. Sure, at least we say we don't want war crimes, but then we train our hard men to be hard, we send them to war, and they seem to find themselves committing, well, war crimes. Back to Pontiac's war, and the British will have to hit back hard enough to get the locals to the talking stuff. British policies will be modified to try and keep them happy, but nasty stuff's really happened on both sides, so there's going to be a bit of racial hatred on both sides. After the Treaty of Paris, George was able to issue a royal proclamation to draw a line on the map to say, hey locals, you all live on that side, and we will call it an Indian reservation just for you. Nice large land parcel it is. What did Nimwa, the Shawnee diplomat, say? You think yourselves masters of this country because you've taken it from the French, who, you know, had no right to it, as it is the property of us Indians. Yeah, good luck with that, mate. Point is, if you are trying to reduce a national debt, then a rebellion in your colony is not helpful. Oh no, hang on, there is a solution. You could tax the colony. What the absolute fuck, say the colonialists. If you guys want a fucking war of independence, then you're going the right way about it. It's often put that the whole thing was about taxing the rich colonialists to convince the common smelly Americans that, whatever, freedom and democracy was under threat. But in fact, there was other legislation that did affect the common smellies and got them pretty riled up. The taxation, though, was the big deal because any idiot can rebel, but if you want to go a proper rebellion, you need rich guys to lead the thing. They can organise, and they've got access to resources that are needed. So taxing the rich Americans was a bad idea. Let's have an example of an act that upset the common smellies. Hello, the Quartering Act. During the French and Indian War, the colonies were happy to stump up food for the British troops. That war is now over, but the government still want the Americans to not only feed the troops, but also provide their accommodation. Now we know that populace has always hated that stuff. They've always hated it. It is the Stamp Act, though, that will lead to riots. The British have introduced stamp duty as a revenue raiser. They introduced that way back in 1712. And don't our modern governments make a huge sum out of that? $24 billion in Australia. That was a couple of years ago when they last measured it. $24 billion. Fucking amazing. Just from stamp duty. Total property taxes that year was $58 billion. Isn't it a surprise that we haven't rebelled? Back to the Stamp Act for the Americans. And it's difficult for me to credit Parliament with having intelligent life when we look at this. Okay, so stamp duty on legal documents, maybe, but they wanted stamp duty on pretty much anything printed. Magazines, playing cards, newspapers, any other type of paper used throughout the colonies. And it had to be paid in British currency, thank you, not in that colonial paper money bullshit that you come up with. It's to pay the wages of that British standing army that, without a war to fight, aren't doing much at all. They're just eating food and being a nuisance. The paper money had come about due to necessity. The colonies weren't able to mint much coin, so they've been using a fair bit of Spanish coin as well. But it wasn't enough, so they started printing paper money. That will go a bit crazy when the real war gets started, the War of Independence, with various colonies all printing more money. A habit that seems to have stayed in place. Yeah, I seem to still like that now. All that printing made the currency pretty much worthless back in the day. Not helping was that it was easily forged by British forgers. The colonists also used beaver skins, tobacco and wampum as currency. Wampum is beads, my dear listener. Thing is, the British have made the Americans unhappy. Frenchies and Spanish will send the Americans nice love letters saying, hey, if you guys want a new European government, we're here, sweeties. Well, let's get rambling up with the new PM coming in, being Charles Watson Wentworth, Marquess of Rockingham. Yeah, it's hard to see George getting along with this guy. He was Lord of the Bedchamber for George II for 8 years, and initially just transferred straight into George III. Rockingham thought that Bute and his supporters wanted to run the whole show. He saw George III's ideas as harmful to the country because George had failed to see that it has to be Whigs totally in charge of everything forever and ever, amen, because only Whigs are capable of good ideas and good government. Tories just can't do it. They just can't. A couple of years into George's reign and Rockingham will resign as Lord of the Bedchamber as a protest over George's policies. George will sack Rockingham from a couple of jobs in return. Over the next 3 years, Rockingham will become allied with others of the old Newcastle faction as they oppose first Bute, then Grenville. And now, here he is. He's back. He's bloody Prime Minister. He will hand out the top jobs to his mates and off we go. He will repeal the Stamp Act. Great. The Americans have all been chanting, no taxation without representation. And the Sons of Liberty have formed to, I don't know, burn effigies and stir up the mob. But the repeal of the Stamp Act means they can all stop whinging now. No, they can't. Well, it's well done to Rockingham for repealing the Stamp Act. He's brought in another thing. The Declaratory Act. That says the British Parliament can legislate for the American colonies in any and all circumstances. Oh dear, we're back to give me liberty or give me death type stuff. Rockingham will last for 15 minutes as PM. I should say that in all this, George didn't get any sort of a say. He was more than a bit interested in the Stamp Act and was told this was a matter of too high a nature for the determination of Your Majesty in your Privy Council, and it is only proper for the consideration of Parliament. Ah, dear me. It was only fair that the American rich guys were pissed off about all this stuff. To have a government imposing its will over you without having any ability to have a say is not a good situation. Something that the poor have been putting up with for years and years and will continue to put up with, so fuck you rich guys, really. But Yeah, they're not getting a say. Part of the problem was that taxes, like customs duties or tariffs or whatever, could be got around by smuggling and other practices. You can't get around stamp duty, so that pissed the Americans off. By getting Grenville out, then George inadvertently ended the stamp tax, but Rockingham followed it up with that declaratory act which reinstated the big whinge. No taxation without representation. The government had certainly come under pressure from English merchants. The Americans are talking up a boycott of English goods. Yeah, we failed to think it through as usual. George had ended up speaking in favour of the repeal of the Stamp Act. It had been tricky with Bute's supporters opposing the appeal. As it was happening, George had given Lord Strange a nice job and said he preferred the Stamp Act was amended rather than repealed. Oh, George, you said you'd support the ministry on this. That's not supporting them, mate. Horace Walpole will note a scene that exhibited a duplicity at once so artful and yet so impolitic, so narrow-minded in its views and so dangerous in its tendency, that the warmest partisans of royalty, of the Princess Augusta and the favourite Bute, will never be able to efface the stain. What crooked counsels, and how insincere the mind which could infuse or imbibe such lessons. Yeah, George is copping a bit of stick. Undermining the ministry again, yeah, I suppose. Still, the repeal goes through, and George will be popular for about 5 minutes until we see the Declaratory Act. Uncle Willie will die in October 1765. He was 44 and very, very chubby. That has made the ministry look weaker, but George will assure them that he will keep on backing them, yeah, and block the idea of getting Bute back in. So they will go and have yet another chat to Pitt, but Pitt wanted too many ministerial changes, so it'll be a no, and Pitt can stack up his attacks on the ministry. George though liked the idea of a Pitt ministry because Pitt was talking about picking guys based on merit and not political party. So that's what George has been wanting, no political parties. A few days later, and Pitt will address the House of Commons, giving his very George-like views on government. Pitt looks strong, and he's dominating the debate in the House of Commons, while Rockingham looks weak and unable to unite his ministry. George is back to Pitt. At the end of the day, it will, of course, be about money. George's brothers want Uncle Willie's pocket money to continue to be paid, but for it to go to them now. Rockingham failed to get that money. George just needs a reason to sack Rockingham, and oh, it would be the Catholic Canadians coming through for him. They are shitty that Frenchy civil law can't be used for property disputes in Quebec, because, well, it's bloody English now, Frenchies. And I'm sure George couldn't give a shit, but it'll be a good excuse to say the government is too weak to continue. The reality seems to be that George undermined the ministry and failed to support it once again, so he's back to Pitt. George wrote to Pitt seeking his views on how an able and dignified ministry might be formed. That's what we want, dignity in politics. Pick whatever ministers you like, Pitt, old mate, and you current lot are out. Fuck off. Pitt is good to go, so it'll be a new government which Pitt is calling the Ministry of All Talents. And this will be the final break for George with Bute the favourite. There'll be a last letter explaining that he had not consulted Bute on the formation of the new ministry because of that old promise he'd made to Grenville that he wouldn't talk to Bute anymore. Smells pretty bullshitty, but the point is, it's the end of Bute as an influencer. Just to make the point, some of Bute's factions will be given jobs, but by George, not Bute. The message is, hey, you guys are now the King's Friends, not Bute's faction anymore. Pitt might want to call it the Ministry of All Talents, but he'd done the usual backdoor deals and whatever, so, well, we've got some talent in it. The ministry has no unity of purpose to hold it together, and a number of the members do not have a lot of talents or experience. Pitt should have taken the job First Lord of the Treasury. That's what you do. That's the big one. That's what gets you into 10 Downing Street. But he's not taking it. Worse, he became Earl Chatham in 1766, so he is no longer leading the Commons. Now, he's in the House of Lords then. This came about because his big fat ego wanted him to be Lord Privy Seal, which requires becoming a noble. One of the reasons the mob liked Pitt was that he wasn't a noble. He was a kind of common smelly. And I say that reminding you that his granddad had just, tripped over a huge fucking diamond in India. Yeah, just lying around, the thing was. Anyway, Pitt is now an earl, so why would the common smellies give a fig about him? We would rather have a nice pot of marmalade than William Pitt, Earl Chatham. Not all the talented guys he picked will be accepting jobs either. He needs a good First Lord of the Treasury, so he's the very talented Temple. He'll say, no, I'm not being your offsider, mate. Therefore, the job will go to an inexperienced guy. Our secretaries of state are not what you might call first class either. Oh, well, at least the opposition is nicely divided, which is helpful. What is not helpful is that Pitt is in poor health and, some of that bad health is in the mental health category. Worse, of course. Even without mental health issues, Pitt is really not Prime Minister material. He is not running a united team of happy campers. Sure, he's been in the job before, but he had George II and Newcastle firmly on board doing the we're all in this together stuff. Mind the gap, dance like nobody's watching, sing like nobody's listening, and live like it's heaven on earth. The same boiling water that softens the potato hardens the egg. Yeah. What am I doing? No, Pitt is not into any of that stuff. Then he will cop what looks like a rather severe bout of depression. Pitt knows how to do this stuff just so long as there's a war going on, but it's a peacetime government, and it seems to be beyond him. The new ministry is under strain. Also under strain is foreign policy. Pitt is still wanting to go to Prussian Fred and the Sausage Empire for a triple alliance against the Bourbon family, who are the kings of France and Spain. George says, fuck it, no, we're Britain, so Fred and the Sausages need to come to us, not us go to them. We also have to stay open in case anybody else wants to make a deal. Fred the Great, in any case, never wants to do a deal with us. For some reason, he thinks our government isn't stable. Oh, gee, really? Oh, look, Fred isn't the only great one right now anyway. There's also Catherine in Russia who wants an alliance with us, but she wants us to pay for that and to agree that we'll help her bash up the Turks. So we're not going to have anything to do with her. She can take Crimea off the Turks without any help from us at all. George's policy remains being avoid stupid foreign wars. Now let's turn our attention back to America. Oh, dear me. It's going to be the Revenue Act of 1767. That won't go well. It's about raising revenue, of course, and that is needed to pay the governors and judges and similar so that they all stay nice and loyal to Great Britain. If we pay them, then they'll be loyal to us. You're always loyal to whoever pays you. It's to put taxes on glass, lead, paint and tea. Tea for the common smellies, dear me. It also gave the authorities powers like the power to search premises for smuggled goods. It created a new customs board at Boston to be run by commissioners. Now that had been done in England, but it was hopeless. We have lots of smuggling going on. Now I said before, we common smellies love smuggling. We think it's great because we get our cup of tea cheaper. Tea was the commodity that the British should have left out, but they want money. Again, we common smellies are not stupid. Part of the money that they'll be raising from us is to pay for the guys who raise the money from us. Yes, we don't like that idea at all. What's the benefit to we common smellies in all this? A more expensive cup of tea. That's what's in it for us. The whole thing is, this paying for civil government was being handled by the colonialists. It was already being done. There was no need for the Revenue Act. The British just wanted to be the ones who would pay for the civil government just to keep it loyal to Britain and for no other reason. And while they said they were paying, the money was going to come from the Americans. The Americans are not happy, and we will find a trade boycott. 11th of February 1768, the Massachusetts Assembly agreed that the tax infringed the rights of American subject. It is an attack on our freedoms, and once again, if you hear that's just the wealthy Americans who are unhappy, raising the cost of a cup of tea for common smellies was a fucking dumb idea. Still, none of this matters because the British, being masters of diplomacy, know how to deal with the situation. Gunships and soldiers. Great. That's sure to help. Pitt seems to neither give a shit or have any sort of decent plan for America. It needs a policy to repair our differences and set out some sort of vision for something. An expanding empire would be a simple vision and might just win American support. We need a dedicated Secretary of State for this rather large chunk of real estate and some sort of agency to link up with the colonies so we can have dialogue. Pitt needs people to help him, but he seemed to think that without some sort of party basis in the ministry, then the best and brightest would just automatically step up to further the national interest. No, they won't. If they're the best and brightest, I can see this is a shit show and won't want anything to do with it. So what's happening is we're drifting along without any real leadership and we've stirred the shit out of America. Just a little bit of Emily Harpus there to get us into some historical fiction. And I had a look at a couple of TV series. First one being Jamestown, which is about, well, Jamestown in the Americas. This is not really for me. Its characters are a bit black and white. Most of the blokes are just evil dickheads, and the women sort them out each episode. So, yeah, not really for me. I want things with a little bit more depth and characters in it, which I got in the other TV series I watched, which is the new Marie Antoinette TV series. I wasn't going to watch this because, really, a bunch of bloody royals stuck in Versailles, not my idea of good fun. But, really, the producers have done a very good job on this. It's not that enjoyable, but you know, how would you make it enjoyable? I don't know. So at the end of the day, I have to say I recommend Marie Antoinette, the TV series. But it is just a matter of what we are going out with. And I think we'll go out with a bit of Aurora. And how about, oh, I don't know, giving into the love. Hope to see you next week. Bye.